Good afternoon and welcome to another Rogcast. Today is the 19th of June 2014 and this, like several others, is coming to you from a place known as Dera. And what a beautiful summer's afternoon it is too. Anyway, there's a couple of things that I wish to ramble over this afternoon. The first of those is relating to a post that I saw on Facebook, which claimed that being a free man, or a free man on the land, does not work. The statement was made, free man does not work, period. There was no further explanation, there's nothing in support of that. So I'm just going to take that initial statement and work around it and show how I think it's actually wrong. Now, many people make the claim that claiming yourself to be a free man or a free man on the land has no effect when it comes to going into court and dealing with the judges and the authorities. And on the face of it, I can understand perfectly why someone might draw that conclusion. But as has been stated before, just because people have difficulties in court when they made the claim that they are above and beyond the jurisdiction and the authority of those who were claiming jurisdiction and authority over them, does not mean to say that their claims have no standing. In fact, on the contrary, I would say that being a free man does indeed establish one's credentials in ways that may well not be recognised by the courts, but nevertheless actually do stand as being true. Now, for those of you that listen to the Rogcast, you understand that my take on it is that a free man is someone who has dropped his citizenship. In other words, he's renounced his UK citizenship by way of a declaration to the Queen. That, under common law, under natural law, stands. That's a very powerful gesture. And I was listening to Henry Palmgren on Red Ice Radio talking with John Rappaport. Now, both men are researchers and men that I have a lot of respect for. But I have to say, this next interview did tend to dwell a little bit on the negative side. Henry was putting forward the view, and John was similarly of that view, that the military-industrial complex is developing its weaponry and its resources irrespectively of what stance people take. Now, my point is that, in other words, they've got all the guns and the bullets. They've got all the force on their side. But of course, as we know, force does not make right. And that's what's going on in the courts here. The courts are put in a quandary when someone goes in there and declares himself to be a free man. Now, some people might say, well, that's a contradiction in terms, because if you go into the court, then you're immediately granting them jurisdiction. That is not necessarily the case. Whilst I understand the difficulties surrounding those who go in under the guise of their fictional name, it's not effectively a carte blanche to do as you would wish and as you see things. Because in those situations, the court simply resorts to the tactics of authoritarianism, whereby, you know, the view is that might is right, and therefore you get railroaded by the judges, who claim that they don't recognise your standing and that what you say is nonsense. Well, my answer to that is, of course, well, they would say that, wouldn't they? A free man on the land is effectively an anarchist. In taking that stance, one has, if one stands by one's position, renounced all forms of authority and control over one, the individual. I think what's going on here is that some people are doing that, but at the same time claiming the rights and benefit privileges, the bogus rights and benefit privileges of the state, which are granted, of course, to the legal fiction. That means they've got a foot in either camp. That means, or maybe a better metaphor would be, it's like a man who's got a foot in two canoes. Instead of just sitting himself down in the one canoe, he's attempting a very tricky maneuver whereby he's trying to balance his status as a slave, effectively someone who accepts the benefit privileges, against a man who is beyond that, an anarchist in the true sense. An archon means means an anarchist is a man who is beyond authority, beyond the rule, beyond rulers. No kings, potentates, and despots are recognized. Now, that puts you in a vulnerable position because, as you can picture, a man who is attempting to travel over water with one foot in two canoes is going to be vulnerable. He's going to be easily capsized. And the nautical metaphor is completely appropriate, as we know, because we're dealing with Admiralty law, which is another reason why the state as free man on the land is in fact very, very powerful. But only if you're prepared to completely renounce your citizenship, to renounce all ties, and take yourself out of the jurisdiction. Now, this, of course, is the one thing that is feared most by the would-be controllers. Because as and when enough people simply renounce this and do step away from the citizenship, the drop of their citizenship, in other words, they rescind all their licenses, they have they void all contractual arrangements, they effectively no longer they're no longer prepared to pay taxes to a tyrannical warmongering regime such as that which we are operating under in these lands, a tyrannical regime formerly known as the United Kingdom government, which is of course a legal fiction. You might say, well, a free man on the land is a legal fiction. Well, it is, but it's also a very powerful position to take if you truly know what you're doing. Now, some people might say to me, well, you tried that and look what happened. You've had two cars stolen and on top of that, you've had your home stolen by agents operating for the Crown. And effectively, that's what's going on. When I say the Crown, I mean the Crown House of Rothschild. The Queen, let's remember, is simply a figurehead for that particular brand. Behind the scenes, the royal family is effectively the Rothschild family. And there's a researcher by the name of Greg Hallett who expands on this in some detail. If you Google the Hallett Report, I'll put a link to it in the show notes, you'll begin to see some of the nefarious activities that have been taking place over the last 200 years or so with regard to the House of Rothschild and their influence over what is laughably referred to as the British royal family. The system cannot survive without the energy, the creativity, and the sweat equity of the people. Without that, it is nothing. And that is why the judges and the courts come down so heavily on those who claim to be freemen. It's the last thing that they want to deal with. But of course, ultimately, a man has to decide under which laws is he operating? To which laws is he actually, truly subject? And of course, the answer to that is natural law. There is no authority that comes between a man and his creator, or the creator, the architect, whichever phrase you wish to express it as. And that is the truth of the matter. Man is subject to natural law, which can be simply expressed thus: I'm free to do exactly that which I wish to do, providing I don't cause loss or harm to anyone else. More succinctly put, my rights end where yours begin. That is the truth. And that position has never been rebutted, because that position cannot be rebutted. Some people take the view, well, you're born into it, you can't escape it. Well, in whose interest is it for you to believe that? In whose interest is it for you to believe, erroneously, as I take it, that the free man approach does not work? You see, it's particularly difficult for those who are at the vanguard of all of this, because they are, if you like, the tip of the spear. And, of course, the authorities are going to come down particularly heavy on them, which is exactly what happened in my case. Nevertheless, and I was speaking about this just this morning, because there are times when I think to myself, well, why didn't you just sell the house, pay off the bogus debt, and move on? Why did you engage in all of this? It's a good question. You know, I only have 30 grand left on the mortgage. The house was worth 110 grand. So, you know, people would say, well, why don't you just sack it all off, sell the house, clear the erroneous debt, and move on? It's a good question, because I realise that things would have been a lot easier. But just because things would be a lot easier does not mean to say that they're the right thing to do. Going with the flow is really something that you only see with dead wood. If you're watching a river, it's dead wood that goes with the flow. A salmon, of course, can skillfully go against the flow, as can many other fish like the trout. So, whilst I take that view, and it does occur to me on a regular basis that maybe I should have taken that stand and made the adjustments and my declaration after I'd done all that, when I was finally in a position to leave the system. But of course, my stance at the time was, well, I understand the fraud that's taken place. I can see it. Therefore, I'm not going to tolerate it anymore. I'm going to take a stand. That's why it took 21 police officers and a set of bailiffs to unlawfully evict me from my house. Which brings us back to the might is right, which is a maxim perhaps that those who contest that the free man approach is a valid one would ultimately adapt. But of course, might is never right, and in that sense it's not really a maxim. Because a maxim at law is, if you like, an eternal truth. So, for instance, as I expressed in episode 13, in the Bible it states, I'm not taking the Bible as my law, by the way, but nevertheless there are salient aspects to it which we would do well to heed. And in there it states, thou shalt not covet thy neighbour's house. I think it also says you shall not covet his wife as well, but that's not what was really going on. When one of my neighbours coveted my house and effectively bought it at half price. So, whilst I accept the observations may have an accuracy about them, because remember, we're dealing with an entirely corrupt system in which there is no justice to be had. The whole system is run by ex-public schoolboys who have been so brainwashed that they know not what they or who they are, and all they rely upon is authority. The authority of whether that's an author, an academic, or a judge in a higher court. They don't make decisions for themselves. They simply cannot see the truth. They wouldn't recognise the truth if it came and kicked them up the arse. However, we are edging ever towards that point where many of these bogus judges and lying solicitors are going to be faced with the truth, and it is going to kick them up the arse with a size 12 clog, if I may use a metaphor that contains that particular image. So I say fuck that. Just because it doesn't appear to work does not mean to say it's the truth. It is not the truth. A man is free. A man is born free. He may well be sold into a system of slavery via his parental ignorance of the facts pertaining to the birth certification and the registration of that. But nevertheless, irrespective of that, when a child is born, he's born under natural law. The seed has been planted, it takes root, the embryo grows, and the child is born free. And as I've stated before, underneath it all, everyone recognises that. Everyone knows it instinctively. Each of us has a rebel heart. And that's why, you know, people do enjoy listening to stories of the underdog standing up against all the odds, again, to the tyranny of the state and those operatives who work within it. So, I take the view that it is entirely correct to declare oneself to be a free man. Just because it might not work in the corrupt court system does not mean to say it shouldn't work. It's the truth, after all. And that brings us on to the second subject for this afternoon's roadcast. And if you're enjoying this, by the way, you can always go and check out some of the others on the website at roguemail.org. And while I'm at it, please feel free to make a donation should you take the view that these roguecasts and the work therein are worthy of some kind of recognition. And at some point, by the way, I will have to, I'm making a note here, to thank all those people. For now, I can only mention one, is Dave of Wessex, who has made a generous donation. And, you know, brother, thank you very much for that. It is greatly appreciated. So, the next subject I wish to tackle is, and you won't be surprised to hear this perhaps, one of a financial nature. And I'm particularly going to be dealing with the fraudulent nature of the fake religion known as money. In Britain, they have a thing called the Retail Price Index. And that used to be what they would call, you know, they used to show on the BBC as a shopping basket, which would contain everyday items, which would be measured in terms of the increase in their price, or the increase in the price. We know if we never have a deflation, prices never really go down. Although for some things, prices do go down as costs go down. But what they did was to take out from that effectively the living costs, in other words, mortgages and rents, from the retail price index. This has effectively hidden the levels of inflation that are at play here. There are people listening to this who understand instinctively and immediately what I'm saying. In Britain today, it can cost as much as 70-80% of an individual's monthly income simply to keep a roof over his head, whether he's paying out in a rent or whether he's paying out another form of rent, which is effectively a mortgage. A mortgage is essentially a payment of rent to the House of Rothschild, which controls the whole monetary system through the fiat currency. The fiat currency is simply the ability that the banks have to create credit seemingly out of thin air, but actually based upon the pledge of the future income of the individual, which is green by way of his signature on the mortgage deed, his acceptance of the mortgage offer of advance, and, you know, in terms of loans, in terms of his acceptance of his completion of a loan application. What he doesn't know is that every time he signs, he's effectively creating a credit in the system. But the credit in the system is different from the actual monies that, real monies of exchange, the notes and the coins that are effectively used by people in their everyday transactions. So that man, the bank, goes to the bank, asks for a loan, whether it's a loan or a mortgage, and on the basis of his promise to pay, which is deemed to be made by way of his signature, credits are released to him. The problem being that there's never enough money in circulation to pay off the amount owing and the interest incurred on top of that. This has led, in a country like Britain, which is possibly one of the most deregulated of all the financial systems, to the development of massive amounts of debt, debts that can never be paid off. In simple terms, there's not enough money of exchange in the system to pay off the credit monies created by the signatures. So effectively, you know, we're all scrambling around trying to gain enough of these promissory notes, the monies, through our sweat equity. And that is clearly a system of indentured slavery. You know, to be paying up to 80%, say, of your monthly income in rent is a very cunning and iniquitous system of control, which, as far as I'm concerned, amounts to nothing less than slavery. And of course, the thing is that we're dealing here with one's unalienable right to have shelter. Remember, man is the only being on this planet, the only creature that pays to be here. And that those payments are, apart from maybe in 8 or 9 countries throughout the world, controlled by the cadre of extortionists and financial deceivers known as the House of Rothschild. And it's been going on for over 200 years now, some say since around 1776, when we had the formation of the development of the Rothschild banking cartel throughout Europe, which has since expanded its tentacles around the entire planet. And that makes them, I suppose, the high priests of this religion known as Monai, money. And very few people have any inkling at all of how money is created, particularly by way of the financial instruments. Because, of course, the system, you ask qui bono, who benefits from this state of ignorance? Well, the financiers benefit from that state of ignorance. And these financiers are in incredibly powerful positions. Little wonder it attracts so many psychopaths. If we take, for instance, the example of James Crosby, who was the CEO of the Bank of Scotland. Paul Moore blew the whistle on this fellow. Paul Moore was a compliance officer or something of that ilk at the Bank of Scotland. And he pointed out just what was going on in terms of the balance between the assets and the liabilities. In other words, back in the period, I think it was 2003-2004, the Bank of Scotland, through a variety of deceptive tricks played upon the people by way of these instruments, these financial instruments, was running a deficit, and get this, of £213 billion. I was in the High Court on Tuesday of this week, so on the 17th of June, and I was listening to the barrister and who was representing the interests of HBOS, or the Bank of Scotland as it was, who was talking, you know, in his typical smug ex-public schoolboy way, as if all this was genuine and the actual monies had been loaned. But of course, when the man who was defending himself got up and pointed out these facts about the 213 quid deficit, in other words, it was the bank was insolvent at the time that it claimed that it had loaned him monies, he had the rug pulled from under his feet, because basically that failure to disclose to the man that the bank was insolvent to the tune of 213 billion fucking quid meant that the contract, I say the contract because of course there is never any lawful contract in place in any event, it meant that the contract could be voided. It was null and void because it failed to disclose to him those facts. You know, if someone fails to, if you enter into an agreement with someone and they fail to provide you with significant information, of course you have the right to void that contract. It stands to reason. And this, of course, was a salient point which the judge, another ex-public schoolboy, acknowledged. This is the elephant in the room. This is something that the barrister did not wish to even touch. An expensive barrister came up from London for the day with his wheeled suitcase full of fucking extensive documentation. But as far as I could see, and as far as anyone who had been in court would have seen, he was utterly defeated by the facts of the matter. Because indeed there was a parliamentary report on this very thing, on the very fact that the Bank of Scotland was operating under such a massive deficit. This, of course, led to the banking collapse in, shortly afterwards in 2008, we had the banking collapse, whereby Gordon Brown bailed out these banks to the tune of billions. I mean, the Befin and Bingley and Northern Rock, I may be wrong in the actual figure, but they were bailed out to the tune of 85 fucking billion pounds. At a time when Gordon Brown effectively sold off the gold that belonged to the people for a fraction of its real value. I mean, for fuck's sake, why is it that Gordon Brown and Sir James Crosby are able to walk around essentially free when they've been engaging in fucking fraud on a massive scale? It's gargantuan. It beggars belief. £215 billion. Imagine what we could do with that kind of money. Imagine what we could do in terms of alleviating some of the energy problems or the food problems that are facing mankind right now. You see, the mortgage situation is the big one because, let's be clear about it, that we all need a shelter. We all need a roof over our heads. So when these bankers are creating these toxic assets and building up this fake system, this house of cards, which is a little bit more complex than the Ponzi scheme, but nevertheless is essentially the same, it's going to crash eventually. But all those people who bought into it, all the speculators and the investors in mortgage-backed securities, for instance, are fucked because they bought worthless pieces of paper. This is why it is often stated that there's no, and it's clear that there's no justice to be had in the courts, because the courts don't want to bring this house of cards down. Which judge would wish to acknowledge the validity of a man's claims against the Crown House of Rothschild? The Crown House of Rothschild, of course, is the employer of the man, operating as the judge. You know, and we've got Freemasonic links to all of that. There's other kinds of secret societies and machinations going on behind the scenes that we are simply not privy to. But the principles, the basic tenets of all of this, which I'm outlining right now, hold true. Back to Mark Twain. A lie can be halfway around the world whilst the truth is still lacing up its boots. So Gordon Brown, Sir James Crosby, were effectively engaging in fraud back in back at that time. I think it was when Gordon Brown was the Chancellor and James Crosby was the CEO of the Bank of Scotland. That CEO of the Bank of Scotland was subsequently sacked when it was found out just exactly what was happening. And how did he deal with it? How did the system deal with his fraud? Well, appointed him the head of the Financial Services Authority. I mean, it's such a fucking joke. It beggars belief. It's entirely fraudulent. These people are fraudsters. Unlike a man who claims to be a free man on the land. Because if that man has done it correctly and he's renounced his citizenship, then he's dealing with the truth. And that man will be more at ease with life than the likes of James Crosby or Gordon Brown. It stands to reason. You can see how this is all fitting together. Now, imagine this. The truth is, there is no such thing as a valid mortgage in Britain in 2014. Imagine a moratorium declaring that to be the case. In other words, everyone is free and clear of any debt pertaining to their house or any loan that they may have entered into with a bank, because the bank has failed to disclose to them exactly how that credit facility was created. And in the case of the Bank of Scotland, logically, how could it be creating credit when it was insolvent to the tune of $213 billion? It's fucking huge. You know, and some people will continue to try and turn a blind eye to this, but, you know, that doesn't mean it's ever going to go away, because it's got to be dealt with. That would mean, so if we had that declaration and all mortgages were declared null and void, that means people would have, they would no longer have to pay rent, because of course most rents are going to service these void mortgages that various landlords have on their properties. It's very interesting. You know, you imagine the levels of freedom that would accrue from that. People would have a complete change of lifestyle. No longer would they have to go out there to earn these monies to pay off a fraudulent debt. And that would release untold amounts of energy and creativity in the people to do exactly that which they wish to do. And anyone who says, oh, well, it just be a recipe for laziness, is talking, quite frankly, out of their arse. Because once man is released of these burdens, he can be very, very creative. Man is not intrinsically lazy. He may well, you know, in a system that's fucking flogging him like a dead horse, be inclined to moments of laziness, but that's only because he needs some respite from this fucking crazy system, and he needs to get off the hamster wheel. He needs to take a breather. And in those moments when he can take a breather, when he's truly free of all these encumbrances, then he can be creative. You know, he can start growing his own fruit and veg. He can start working on his house. He can do, you know, he can engage in those activities, develop those skills that perhaps have been neglected, because he's effectively currently operating under a system of a religious system of control, whereby, you know, 80-90% of his income is going to the banks, which are the agents of the House of Rothschild, the Crown House of Rothschild, and the various taxes and stuff. You know, little wonder that judges are so dishonourable when it comes to facing a man in court who's gone in as the real man. Little wonder. So, you know, I'm rebutting any claim that anyone makes about the free man approach not working. The significant fact is that many more young people need to pick up on this. The sooner the young people pick up on it, because they're currently the most affected by this. Another salient fact is this. In Britain today, the average price of a house, I was reading it in the Daily Mail online, which I know is not an accurate source of information, but generally in terms of, in some instances, like, you know, finance, it can be, particularly if you're reading the right parts. The average price of a house is 220 grand. The average income in 2014 in Britain is £22,000. That means the average house costs 10 times the amount a man can earn in a year. And then, of course, you add on compound interest to that, and effectively, that debt can never be fucking paid. He's on the hamster wheel, perpetually, trying to keep up, trying to keep his head up and earn sufficient monies to pay off these bogus debts and this unconscionable compound interest that's being applied to them. You see, those who are working in banking and the legal professions, a lot of them are psychopathic in the sense that they like to have power over others, and they like to, you know, they enjoy making monies and making a profit. They truly have bought into the one eye, the mon eye. So a little wonder, you know, if you're that ilk, that you are going to be attracted to working in those professions that give you a semblance of power over others. And if you've got the ability to create money seemingly out of thin air, then how fucking powerful are you? You're effectively one of the gods. You're a god of the monet. But of course, it's all fake. It's all phony. The only authority is natural law. No man comes between you and the source of all of this, the creator, the grand architect. No man. And that is the trap that people get caught up in. And, you know, we've all been caught up in it, God knows that, apart from a tiny minority. Now, when I bought my house back in 1994, so nearly 20 years ago, I think I was on something like £16,000 or £17,000 a year working as a classroom teacher. And the house was 34 grand, so it was a little over twice what I was earning. And you might look at that and think, well, that's feasible. That's okay. And at that time, it was more regulated. So it wasn't that easy to get a mortgage. And, you know, but the thing is, even taking out a mortgage at that time, it became untenable because I was no longer prepared to work to service a debt that I didn't owe. Why should I? Who in their right mind would? And, you know, those who say it's all fictional, and when you're going to court and if you're using the legal fiction, then you've fucked. Yeah, that may be the case, but, you know, you can still throw a spanner in the works, and there was a massive spanner thrown in the works of the machinations of the Bank of Scotland on Tuesday the 17th of June, as far as I could see, because the man was bringing in to court the fact that the bank was insolvent. At the time, it was alleging that it had loaned him monies. And of course, that insolvency was not disclosed to the man, and therefore the contract, such as it is, he was entitled to void it completely. It was void ab initio because of the failure to disclose. So to get back to the retail price index, well, by taking out mortgages and rents from the basket, if you like, that they were measuring the inflation rate by, and it's all accounting woo-woo, if you ask me. That has effectively hidden the real rate of inflation. And I noted that currently housing prices are on the increase by 10 grand, so 10% per year. And that, you know, if you factor in that, you can see that inflation in this country is fucking astronomical. Because even at the time, you know, when I took out my mortgage, I wasn't actually paying as much. I don't think I was paying 50% of my monthly income to have a roof over my head. But nowadays, I would, if you know, if it was the same situation now, if I was 20 years younger and I'd taken out a mortgage that was 10 times the value of my annual salary, then you can see that's a recipe for fucking disaster. And ultimately, who benefits from that? Well, the banks benefit. And this is what's going to happen now, because the interest rates, according to Carney's the CEO of the Bank of England, the private Bank of England. He made a speech at the Mansion House the other day. Interest rates are going to rise, and some people have got massive mortgages. I mean, it's all highly inflated, but nevertheless, it means their salary is not going to go up by 10% per annum, which means they're getting constantly squeezed and pressurised to pay off these fake debts. It's going to get a lot worse. So what may well be the case, I mean, if this continues, until we actually knock out these void mortgages, then people are going to be facing evictions. It's going to spiral. And who benefits, of course, is the banks. The Crown House of Rothschild will benefit from this. And in the meantime, we've got the figurehead making a speech in Parliament saying that she's got the right to go and frack everyone's house. But it's not an act of trespass, and you're a fucking pleb. The Crown owns all of this land, and therefore you've got to do as you're told. Now fuck off, sonny. We're going to sidestep your rights under natural law, and the right under natural law is the right to shelter and the right to defend yourself from attack. And this is what is going on right now. We are under attack from the Crown House of Rothschild. That is the real enemy within. To go back to the interview we read out, John Rappaport and Eric Henry Palmgren were making the point about Facebook effectively having these algorithms and these programs in the system that can that monitor what when people are about to make a post. If you change that post, it's monitoring the post. And John Rappaport's making the point, it's a valid point, that effectively you've got a form of self-censorship going on. Because through the likes of Snowden and the information that he, whoever Snowden might be, I suspect he's an actor, the information he's released is that every move is being operated. We're under massive surveillance. But what John Rappaport and Henrik Palmgren forgot to mention was, what if the people no longer give a fuck about the information that they're putting out there and what they're posting on Facebook? Because what if the information they're dealing with is in fact the truth? Who are the ones that are afraid of the truth? Well, the controllers of all this fictional bullshit are the ones who are terrified of the truth coming out. But of course, you know, their attempts to put a lid on it are spiralling up along with, you know, in a similar fashion to the rates of inflation. The real rates of inflation, which are massive when you factor in the housing situation. I think their days are numbered, because frankly, this is all unsustainable. So basically, you know, why give a fuck about information that you're putting on Facebook if you're dealing with the truth? Why should you give a fuck about who's watching it? Of course, you have the right to privacy. There's no denying that. You're not going to find privacy on Facebook. But if you're dealing with the truth and you're putting posts there of a nature that is putting out of information, real information that is useful to others, if you're putting that information on there, you don't need to be afraid of it. You don't need to be afraid of the truth. I'm not saying people need to be wary of putting out personal information on Facebook. Yeah, there's a lot of people who do. You know, they get into spats, and this provides those who are watching with insights into their psyches, their psychological operations, and all of that. But, you know, if you don't want that information out there, don't make posts on Facebook. But if you're just posting the truth and your posts are fucking entirely valid, go ahead, man. Reveal it. Don't be afraid. You see, this is another thing of the promotion of a surveillance state. They want you to believe every move is being watched, whether it's by CCTV, but whether it's through your computer, through your communications. And it's this idea, as John Rappaport correctly asserts, that people become aware of that, and as a consequence, they begin to censor themselves. And therefore, you know, the control system is actually operating through that fear, the fear of being surveyed. And like I say, if you're pumping out the truth about chemtrails, about fraudulent finance, about the poisoning that's taking place in terms of the pesticides that are sprayed on our foods, the fluoride that's put in the water and other chemicals, the
the genocide of Wi-Fi and other forms of radiation through mobile phones and mobile phone masts. That's the truth. You're putting that out. Why would you need to be afraid? You see, knowledge is really is power. And this was a point that neither John or Henrik really addressed. I've said it before, and it's worth repeating. The currency, the real currency, the real flow is knowledge. Knowledge is power. Therefore, the system attempts to regulate that flow by way of a resistor in the circuit board. In terms of finance, of course, money, the one eye, is the resistor. And, it controls everything. But I suspect it's not going to control everything for much longer. It stays unnumbered. And maybe this is why things get a little bit feverish in terms of the operations of the military-industrial complex right now. It's very interesting when you look at it. I've said it before and I'll say it again. I am now, as a consequence of the research and the information that I've delved into over the last few years, a lot wealthier than I was, say, 6 years ago. Because I've got a lot more knowledge. Knowledge is the real money. You know, and I'm a little bit wary that in putting out programs like that, it maybe ratchets up the fear levels amongst people when really that's counterproductive, because the fear also acts as a resistor in the system, in that it inhibits people, it inhibits them and maybe moves them into a position whereby they aren't engaging in self-censorship. But like I say, if you're dealing with the truth, you don't need to be afraid. There's a lightness that comes with that. And I saw it palpably in court, in the High Court on Tuesday. The judge had a nervousness that manifested itself in a very peculiar way. His tongue was either licking almost licking the tip of his nose, or the tongue was hanging down to almost touch his chin from time to time. At positions, moments of great stress, I would imagine. You see, it's almost like a nervous tic. He can't quite control it because he's dealing with lies. The barrister was similarly ill at ease. And this barrister spoke for nearly 2.5 hours. And it was, you could have just left the room whilst he was on and then come back, because it wasn't really worth repeating. It was all based on the erroneous belief that the bank had actually loaned monies, and this was effectively demolished in the afternoon session when the man stood up and pointed out the facts of the matter, namely the insolvency of the bank. I mean, fucking £213 billion in debt. Absolutely fucking incredible. And this is what happens, of course, when you've in Britain, when they've deregulated the financial industry. These banksters believe, or they act, like they are gods. And if you have the power to create monies out of thin air, then you are a god, some might say. That's the psychopathy at play here. Whereas the man who was expressing the truth of the matter spoke with conviction and with a forcefulness that the barrister and the judge could only really, they had no comeback to that at all. The power of truth, my friends, is not to be underestimated. And even if you do get railroaded in court, if you've put it on the record, it stands. The truth will stand. You know, I got railroaded, but the truth of what I expressed in court is still there on the record. And it's why why I'm prepared to call out these liars and deceivers for what they are. Because I know the truth. I don't fear the truth. They do. So we need, as always, to apply some critical thinking to that which we're being presented with. I'm just going to wind up today's episode with a summary of that which we've covered this afternoon. First of all, truth will out. There is no need for people to be operating under levels of fear. Fear, whether that's fear of the surveillance system, whether it's fear of the financial system. The sooner people can drop that fear, the sooner they can live freely without these impositions being placed on them. I'd also like to end with a plug for the what we're calling the shockumentary, The Great British Mortgage Swindle. This is going to be an epic, and we're going to be putting on a special world premiere of it at a venue to be announced nearer the time. But I'm just giving you the heads up. DVD copies, first presses, will be available, and for a donation. And this is going to be, is it going to be the stake through the heart of the fraudulent financial scams? It could well be. It could well be. Because the truth will out. And in spite of what Henrik and John Rappaport mistake, and I know it seems a little bit dark at times, but if it is getting dark at times and it is getting a bit heavy, then step out into the landscape. Reconnect with nature. And just observe how all those fears and impositions dissolve away. So, to recap, a free man is an anarchist. A man has removed himself from all forms of authority, from the systems of control, and those potentates, monarchs, and downright bandits who attempt to control him, because he steps into his natural state of existence. A free man, he's not really a free man if he's still using the benefit privileges afforded to him by the phony apparatus of the state. In fact, such a man may well be a statist. And if he's going to court as a statist, then I would say, yeah, he's destined to fail. The ideal situation is to resolve all differences, all issues, without recourse to the courts, because in essential terms, the courts are quite simply not competent. They are there to control, to keep the lid on the individual. And all those who may pop up above the parapet, they're there to knock them down. And secondly, it's clear, or it should be becoming increasingly clear by now, that once we knock out, once we bring to an end the Great British Mortgage Swindle, things are going to change immeasurably. This will give the people the opportunity to throw off their fucking phony shackles and release themselves from any and all phony state authority. We've got to take the land back. As I said before, a rush and a push, and the land which we stand on is ours. It has been before, and it shall be again. It's as simple as that. Notwithstanding John Rappaport's interview with Henrik the other day, John is a man who acknowledges, readily acknowledges the supremacy of the individual, that all power lies with the individual and within the individual's imagination. So if you can imagine these lands being free and clear of all erroneous debt, and people waking up to the falsity of the religion known as the One Eye, under whose trance they've fallen, you'll begin to see just how powerful we as individuals are. So there's no need to be fearful. People don't need to be afraid of posting on Facebook. They should be making those postings with awareness and be conscious of what's going on. And if you're using that system, be totally aware of what information is being gathered and how it's being gathered. It's a beautiful thing, isn't it? And on that massively positive note, I'm going to wish you all, wherever you might be, a beautiful evening, a beautiful day, a beautiful morning, and I'll catch you on the other side. Cheers.